Thank you, Mr. Miller. Good morning, everyone. Happy Feast of Unleavened Bread. Sure happy to see everyone here, especially brethren from Cleveland that we haven't seen in quite a while. The only problem is I don't know how to start out a Holy Day message without making fun of Mr. Johnson, and he's in Canada. So you'll have to tell him I said so. But here we are on the seventh day of Unleavened Bread, 2018. So let's start with a question. Is your house still clean? Now some of you might be thinking, clean? No. Free from leaven? Yes. Well, that's what I mean. Is your house still free from leaven? Is it still clean in that sense? We know that we're commanded to get rid of the leaven from our homes before these days begin. But is your house still clean? Is it still free of leaven? Did you stay focused this week and remember not only not to eat leaven, but also not to bring it back in within your quarters, within your house? Well, good. I hope so. But how about spiritually, brethren? We know leaven is a physical symbol of sin during these 7 days. And as important as that physical symbol is, and obedience of the letter of that command is to put the leaven out of our homes, to refrain from eating it and partake of unleavened bread instead, the physical symbol isn't what God's after, as we know. So is your house still clean? As we move forward tonight after sunset, and these physical symbols expire for another year, will the spiritual correlations continue for each of us? Certainly we'll hear today about the need to continue to starve ourselves of sin and to continue to partake of righteousness, the righteousness of Jesus Christ, even after these 7 days are complete. But will we also keep our houses clean? Let's turn back to Exodus chapter 12 to begin. We know in Exodus 12, this is the first mention we have of this special feast that we're supposed to observe. Exodus 12, we're going to begin reading in verse 15, where it says, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day, you shall remove leaven from your houses. And as we understand it, brethren, that means we shall have removed already by that first day leaven from our houses. Something that should already have been done when we arrive on that first day, as I'm sure you were diligent in doing. For whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. Verse 16, on the first day there shall be a holy convocation, and on the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation for you. That's today, that's why we're here. No manner of work shall be done on them, but that which everyone must eat, that only may be prepared by you. So you shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread, for on this same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. Now from the context here, we can tell that the evening it's speaking of is the end of the day that it's referring to. So from the end of the 14th to the end of the 21st. Which is today on God's calendar, 21st of Abib. And verse 19, for 7 days, no leaven shall be found in your houses. Now we read before in verse 15 that the leaven was supposed to be removed by the time we come to the first day. We know that, we understand it. But it's also an ongoing task, isn't it? To keep leaven out during this week. For 7 days, no leaven shall be found in your houses. Since whoever eats what is leavened, that same person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is a stranger or a native of the land. You shall eat nothing leavened in all your dwellings. You shall eat unleavened bread. Chapter 13, verses 6 and 7, reemphasizes the same point I want to draw out here today, brethren. That yes, we remove leaven before the feast begins, we have to make sure we keep it out along the way too. Exodus 13, beginning in verse 6. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Eternal. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days, and no leavened bread shall be seen among you. nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. No leaven should come back into our homes, should come back into the areas where we have control, where we can keep it out during these 7 days. No leaven shall be seen among you in all your quarters, in all your borders or your boundaries. We see here, brethren, that it wasn't even supposed to be around them. Not only were they supposed to refrain from eating it, but it wasn't even supposed to be around them. Why? Why not just command the Israelites and command us today to just refrain from eating the leaven? Wouldn't it be a whole lot easier to prepare for these days if you could just leave it on the shelf and agree to not touch it for those 7 days? We could leave it on the shelf and avoid consuming it and then just go about our business after sunset tonight. Pick back up where we left off. Someone asked my dad recently, why do you spend so much time cleaning for these days anyway? I mean, are you going to go eat out of the dustpan? Oops. Sorry. See, God didn't like that comment either. No, we're not going to go eat out of the dustpan. So why remove it from our homes? Why sweep it up and get it out? Well, the spiritual lesson for us is clear, brethren. We're not to be comfortable around sin. Not only are we supposed to refrain from eating it, from practicing it, participating in it ourselves, but we shouldn't even allow it to be around us where it can influence us and affect us. We're commanded not to eat leaven, picturing our need to refrain from practicing sin. But we're also commanded to remove leaven from our presence, wherever we have the power and authority to do so, picturing the need to remove the influence and temptation of sin. So we can ask ourselves again, is your house still clean? Your spiritual house? Or is there leaven on the shelf of our spiritual lives that still need to be removed? Is there leaven on the shelf of our spiritual lives that still needs to be removed? Now, the distinction I'm trying to bring out today is that there are things in our lives that we know we need to stop eating. Sins that we struggle with that we know we need to remove. We need to stop chowing down on those. But is there also leaven on the shelf? Are there things in our lives that we don't necessarily see as outright sin, that we don't necessarily eat ourselves, but things that we're comfortable leaving in our quarters? Sins that we're comfortable having around us. Is there leaven on the shelf of our spiritual lives? Let's turn back to 1 Corinthians chapter 5. 1 Corinthians chapter 5. You know, there are things, like I said, that we know we need to get rid of, that we need to stop eating, things we're trying to overcome, to put out, to replace with righteousness. But are there other areas in our lives, maybe things that we consider to be the gray areas of Christianity, where we're comfortable just having a little bit of leaven on the shelf? 1 Corinthians 5, beginning in verse 6. Paul says, your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? And Paul's saying, he's telling us here, you can't keep it around. We can't keep things in our spiritual pantry that have the potential to leaven and say, well, I'm not going to really eat it. I'm just going to leave it there for now. And when we all go through our cupboards, we see things that we really don't want to eat, but we don't really want to get rid of it either, physically speaking, even if it expired in 2009. It is the same true spiritually. Are there things we know we shouldn't eat that we don't want to eat ourselves, but we keep it around anyway? Verse 7, Paul says, he tells us what to do with those things. Therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump. And this phrase right here in the middle of verse 7 just astounds me. Since you truly are unleavened. That's how God sees us. And how are we truly unleavened? For indeed Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. So we're told, get it out of our houses. Get it out of all of your quarters, all areas of your life where you can eliminate that influence of sin. Get it out. Don't be comfortable with it. But we tend to say, but I'm not going to eat it. It's not going to affect me. It's not going to cause me to commit that sin. But I think this section here gives us the why as to why we need to continue to clean out our spiritual pantry. Because we've been made new. You've been made a new lump. God has made us unleavened through Christ our Passover. We've been made unleavened by His sacrifice. We could never be truly unleavened on our own. No amount of de-leavening our lives on our own would make us truly unleavened. But we have been made truly unleavened because of Christ our Passover, His sacrifice. That's why it's so important to eliminate sin from all our borders, anywhere we can. I mean, think about it, wives. Could you imagine if you de-leavened the entire house and you were finally resting from all your labors and your husband comes home with cookies for the kids and they walk around the house nibbling as they go? I mean, I know that's unheard of. Kids don't walk around and make a mess. But. And you come out and you say, what are you doing? Now, how appreciated would you feel for all the work that you put in to de-leaven your home if your family just spread the leaven all about? Or husbands, can you imagine going through the torturous task of cleaning out the minivan? And then your wife, she takes the kids for a ride and she gives them goldfish crackers. Goldfish crackers! The devil's snack. Those little orange fish-shaped crackers that if you breathe on too heavily, they turn into 1,000 pieces. How would you feel, husbands? Would you feel appreciated for all the work you did to de-leaven that vehicle? By the way, I have no earthly idea how kids can get crumbs under the car seat. It's physically impossible. You're sitting on it, you eat, and it goes under you. I don't understand. I digress. The point is, brethren, God has made us truly unleavened through the sacrifice of His very Son. How do we show our appreciation for that? We may not purposely grab a snack pack of sin and spread the crumbs around, but is to excuse sinful influences in our lives really any more respectful and appreciative of what He's done for us? Does it show a respect and an honor for the de-leavening that Christ has done in our lives? So what are some examples of leaven on the shelf? I'd like to just give a few broad categories quickly so you have an idea of what I'm talking about here. What we're really talking about is influences that we allow in our lives. Things that we wouldn't necessarily consume ourselves, but that we tolerate in our presence, or that we approve of in others. I hesitate to even say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Young people, this message is for you too. And I hesitate to say it because every message is for you too. You're here to learn too. But I'm saying it because I've sat in the chair where you are. And as I'm sure most of the people in this room would agree, it's a whole lot easier to keep the leaven out from the beginning than to make a mess and try to clean it up. So what are some of these influences that could possibly be leaven on the shelf in our spiritual pantry? Things that we tolerate that make us more comfortable around sin. Well, how about human influences? People. Are there people in our lives that we choose to spend time with that make us more comfortable around sin? Now, obviously, we all have to be around people who don't understand God's truth. You can't choose your coworkers. You can't always choose your family. Sometimes you have an unconverted spouse who's pleased to dwell, and it's your job to do the best with the situation you're in. But where you have the ability to choose whom you spend your time with, are these influences that stir you up to love and good works? Or could they be described as leaven on the shelf? People who increase our level of comfort with sin. Now, we can say they don't affect us, that we won't allow them to rub off on us. But are they leaven on the shelf? Not that it's their fault, necessarily. But are we unnecessarily allowing people, the influences of people in our lives, to make us more comfortable with sin within our borders? How about philosophical influences, ideas of the world? Are there philosophies, ideas of the world and the society around us that might be rubbing off on us? Because they can and they will if we don't recognize them for what they really are. Ideas like tolerance, moral relativism, an attitude that says, whatever works for you, it's not my place to decide whether what you're doing is right or wrong. How about humanism? You know, just try to be a good guy, do good to others. That's all you can really do. Do we buy into any of these philosophies in the world around us? They're common in the world. And if we don't call them out for what they are, then they could be like leaven on the shelf. Things we allow to be in our presence that will have an effect on us. One more broad category. How about entertainment influences? Entertainment influences. Are there things that we watch, read, or sing along to that cause us to become more comfortable with sin? And we can tell ourselves, well, I know that it's wrong, and as long as I acknowledge that it's wrong when I'm watching it or listening to it, then there's no danger in me eating that leaven, committing that sin. I would never do that. You know, as long as I recognize that it's a sin for that character on this show to sleep with a different person each episode, it's not going to affect me. Or to openly practice homosexuality or to commit adultery, that doesn't mean I'm going to go do those things. I'm not going to become a vampire or practice witchcraft just because I like reading books about it. But could it be leaven on the shelf, brethren? Could entertainment be an area of our lives where we're not eating the leaven, per se, not practicing this in ourselves, but where we are allowing it within our quarters? Now, a friend of mine passed on a quote once. I'm not exactly sure the source, but I just want to make it clear I can't claim it for myself. But it stuck with me. He said, we cannot allow ourselves to be entertained by the very sins that Christ had to die for. We cannot allow ourselves to be entertained by the very sins that Christ had to die for. What kind of appreciation does that show? And if we allow ourselves to have those influences in our lives, it will affect us. It's leaven on the shelf that we must purge out. So would you sing that song with your mother in the car? Would you watch that movie if your kids were still awake? Would that video game or book where commandments are broken to serve a greater good be welcome in God's house? If not, then they might not just be harmless forms of entertainment. They may be leaven on the shelf, things that are causing us to be comfortable with sin. And you know, making us comfortable around sin is exactly what Satan wants to do. It's what he's done from the beginning. Let's take a look at an unfamiliar section, Genesis 3. We never turn here. Just kidding. It's amazing to me how God's word truly is living and powerful, and how we can read the same passages. I mean, how many times have we read about the story of the Garden of Eden? But we can read the same passages and see more and more. Genesis 3. You know, one of Satan's desires is for us to get comfortable with sin in its smallest forms so that it can grow over time. He wants us comfortable with the ingredients He gets us comfortable with the ingredients first, so he can try to feed us the leavened loaf later. And that's, in a sense, what he did here with Eve, beginning in verse 1, Genesis 3. Now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, "Has God indeed said, 'You shall not eat of every tree of the garden?'" And the woman said to the serpent, "We may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, 'You shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die.'" Now it's interesting that the account in the previous chapter doesn't say anything about not touching the tree, but it's something that's added in here. Eve says, we're not supposed to eat it, we're not even supposed to touch it. Verse 4, "Then the serpent said to the woman, 'You will not surely die.'" Lie. "For God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." And verse 6, "So when the woman saw..." Let's stop right there. "When the woman saw that the tree..." Eve just said, we're not supposed to eat it. We're not even supposed to touch it. Why was she looking at the tree then? Were there not other trees in the garden for her to gaze upon? Why did she allow herself to get close enough to look? She let the leaven on the shelf, brethren. Now, I've always read this passage as one quick scene. And maybe that's the case. But I wonder how much time actually passed here. In verse 6, it says, "So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. She also gave to her husband with her, and he ate." And I wonder if it began with just a glance at the tree in passing. I wonder if she looked at the tree from afar the next day. Perhaps the next day, I wonder if she got a little closer just to examine the fruit a little bit closer. Until one day, she just had to know what the texture of it was like, so she reached out and touched it. And perhaps the next day is when she finally just couldn't resist and had to have her first taste. I don't know. We don't know how much time passed in this scenario, in this situation. But one thing is for sure. Eve's sin began with a tiny kernel of curiosity that was not properly placed in check. And in the end, she was feasting on the very thing that she thought she would never even touch. And we're all capable of that, brethren. Even if we think we aren't, we're all capable of that. There's no sin that any of us can think we're above. Well, I would never commit that sin. If we think that, but then we allow ourselves to become comfortable with it, we could be tasting. If we want to ensure that we indeed never do commit it, then we can't allow ourselves to be comfortable around it in the first place and think it could never draw us in. Now turn back to Judges chapter 1. Because we see a correlation here with the children of Israel. Now, what did God tell Israel when he brought them into the promised land? He told them, when you enter into the promised land, to drive out the inhabitants. Drive them out completely. Don't let them stick around. If you'd like to look at one of the references about that, you can jot down Numbers 33, verses 50 through 53. But what I want to read here in Judges 1 is what really happened, what they did. God told them to drive out the people, but in verse 18 of Judges chapter 1, it says, "Also Judah took Gaza with its territory, Ashkelon with its territory, and Ekron with its territory." Verse 19, "So the Lord was with Judah, and they drove out the mountaineers, but they could not drive out the inhabitants of the lowland, because they had chariots of iron." They had an excuse. They had chariots of iron. Dropping down to verse 21, "But the children of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who inhabited Jerusalem. So the Jebusites dwell with the children of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day." Down to verse 27. However, Manasseh did not drive out the inhabitants of Beth-Shean and its villages, or Tanakh and its villages, or the inhabitants of Dor and its villages, or the inhabitants of Ibleam and its villages, or the inhabitants of Megiddo and its villages, for the Canaanites were determined to dwell in that land. You know, the Canaanites don't want to leave. So, what could they do? Verse 28, and it came to pass when Israel was strong that they put the Canaanites under tribute, but did not completely drive them out. You can continue through the rest of the chapter, and it's the same story over and over again with different tribes. The heading of this section in my Bible says, incomplete victories. But look at Judges 2, beginning in verse 1. It says, then the angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim and said, I led you up from Egypt and brought you to the land which I swore to your fathers. I brought you out of Egypt. I gave you this land. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you. In verse 2, and you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land. You shall tear down their altars, but you have not obeyed my voice. Why have you done this? God told them to drive out the people, not to be comfortable around them, because they would have an effect on the Israelites. They let some stay, built relationships with them, intermarried with them, and began to worship their gods. And in verse 3, this is God's response. Therefore, I also said, I will not drive them out before you. I'm not going to do all the work for you, Israel. But they shall be thorns in your side, and their gods shall be a snare to you. You didn't get them out while you had the chance, so now this is going to be a thorn in your side that you have to deal with. Is there leaven on the shelf of our lives, brethren, that has the potential to be a thorn in our sides for the rest of our lives if we don't just get it out? We will be influenced by what we allow to be around us. Again, the things we have control over. We can't toe the line of sin and remain righteous. A little leaven leavens the whole lump, and it has to be purged out. I think that sometimes we allow the ingredients that could lead to sin into our quarters because we start off by asking the wrong question. When it comes to those gray areas of Christianity, which there seem to be many of these days, when it comes to those gray areas, we often ask the question, is it really a sin? Is it really a sin to watch this? Is it really a sin to date outside the church? Is it really a sin to protect myself with a firearm? Is it really a sin to fill in the blank? And then we ask other people to get some reassurance, to look for some confirmation that there's some leeway in this matter, that it's unclear. But is that even the best question to start with? How about instead of, is it a sin, how about the question, is it godly? Is it going to cause me to reflect the character and mind of Jesus Christ? Is this influence going to build his righteousness in me? You know, instead of looking for what might be permissible, we can look for what's certain. Instead of towing the line of sin and seeing how close we can get, why not just stay where it's safe? But that requires a shift in our focus. And it's a shift in our focus that we need God's help with, for sure. Let's look at Psalm 119. And we'll just read verse 37 of Psalm 119. Now, this requires a shift in focus because it's a natural desire in man to be attracted to the line, to be attracted to sin. Psalm 119, there's this beautiful section of this psalm, verses 33 to 40, but we'll just highlight verse 37 so that Mr. Coons gets a chance to say something this morning. Verse 37, turn away my eyes from looking at worthless things and revive me in your way. Now, the challenging part about simply avoiding sin and putting in righteousness is that there is a passing pleasure to sin. It's enjoyable in the moment. If it wasn't, it'd be a whole lot easier to avoid it, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be much easier to avoid leaven for these 7 days if it didn't taste good? You know, why not 7 days without kale? That would make Mr. Johnson happy. Or the days of unlivered lunch. Man, sorry, Mrs. Nicholson, can't eat that liver this time. No, we put out the glorious gluten-filled treat. And it's fitting because sin tastes good. There's a pool, an enticement to partake of it. But the psalmist here looks to the long term, not just the passing pleasure of sin. He didn't say, turn away my eyes from looking at pleasureless things. He said, turn me from what's worthless. Help me to see the true value in it so that I can turn away from the things that are worthless. Yes, sin is enjoyable in the moment, and that's why it's so hard to avoid. But we can all pray this prayer and ask God to help us look at the long-term effects, to look at the true value. Turn me from what has no lasting value and instead fix my eyes on what has real benefit, your way, your righteousness, the unleavened bread. And we need God's help to shift our perspective, but we also need to do our part, as we know. We need to recognize what is worthless and what could draw us closer to sin and what has the potential to draw us closer to the ever-living God. Might draw me closer to sin, might draw me closer to the ever-living God. Which one will we choose? Now, even as this feast comes to a close tonight, we must go forward and continue to look through the spiritual cupboards of our lives and check the ingredients. Let's turn over to Ephesians chapter 5. Yes, the days of unleavened bread are coming to a close this evening, again for another year. But our need to put righteousness in, to keep sin out, and to keep it out of our entire lives, our homes, our quarters, that it still continues after sunset tonight, as we know. Ephesians 5 and verse 5. For this you know, that no fornicator, unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. It's interesting when you read Revelation 21, where it's talking about God making his tabernacle with men. It says, there will be no leaven in God's house. There'll be none that cause sin in God's house. Verse 6, let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these things the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. And verse 7, therefore do not be partakers with them. For you were once darkness. Here's the why again. Why avoid these things? You were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. Respond accordingly. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth. So walk as children of light. In verse 10, finding out what is acceptable to God. When you figure out the things that are valuable to Him, the things that will draw you closer to Him, fill your shelves with that. In verse 11, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. Not just don't participate in these things, but have no fellowship with them. Don't even allow them in your borders, in your house. Expose them. You know, in a sense, he's saying, don't play around with sin. Eradicate it. Purge it out. And by doing that, we really help ourselves in the long run, brethren. Final scripture, let's look at Hebrews chapter 12. When we have no fellowship with the things of darkness, when we put out sin from all our borders, striving always to eliminate the things that could make us more comfortable with sin, we're making our paths straight. We're making the road smooth for ourselves. Hebrews 12 and verse 12. You know, this is coming right after this section about chastening from God and how he chastens us because he loves us. But verse 12 gives us some encouragement. It says, "Therefore strengthen the hands which hang down and the feeble knees." And when do the hands hang down? When you're discouraged, right? When you're moping around because you're discouraged. God's chastening me. I'm never going to be good enough. It says, "Strengthen the hands which hang down and the feeble knees, and make straight paths for your feet, so that what is lame may not be dislocated, but rather be healed." We don't have to mope around in discouragement when we see that there's still more de-leavening that needs to be done in our lives. What we do have to do is make the path smooth. Make the path straight. Eliminate the things that have the potential to make us stumble. Clean out the cupboards. Don't allow the ingredients that could lead to sin to remain conveniently. And verse 14 says, "Pursue peace with all people and holiness, without which no one will see the Lord." Put righteousness in, we could say. Surround ourselves not with the influences that make us comfortable with sin and could lead to it, but create an environment in which growth can flourish. How many influences do we have in our lives that cause us to become better people? How much of our time is spent with those influences impacting us? Surround ourselves with positive influences that can lead to growth. Build relationships with God's people. Talk about His Word and His plan. Make his philosophies our own. Get involved in the work of the church. Participate in things like camps, church activities, service projects. Watch, sing, and read, and post things that are for His glory, not things that might be leaven on the shelf. Starve the old nature. Feed the new man. Remove the leaven from the shelf. We know the representation of leaven, picturing sin, ends tonight at sunset. But the spiritual lessons must continue for us throughout this year. We must strive to keep sin out and to put righteousness in. But as we go throughout the days, weeks, and months ahead, let's remember to not only refrain from eating the leaven of sin, but wherever possible, to eliminate its influence from all of our quarters. Why? Because Christ has made us unleavened. Our reasonable response is to keep our houses clean. So continue to search the ingredient list. Eradicate leaven from our lives, even the leaven that we think won't really affect us. Fill the shelves of our lives with the ingredients that reflect Jesus Christ living in us. And by doing so, show an appreciation of what He's done. He's made us truly unleavened.